The Clash of the Two Americas, Volume 1, The Unfinished Symphony, was written by Matthew Errett and Cynthia Chung and published by the Canadian Patriot Press. This recording is narrated by Hugh Patrick Trudeau. Introduction. The United States today sits upon a precipice, and the dream of the Founding Fathers of a new age of reason for all humankind may soon be washed away by the sands of time as just another failed effort to bring humanity into alignment with the force of natural law. Time and again, humanity has been brought closer to this dream of an age of moral reason and cooperation that would define the terms of international law, political economy, the arts, and even science policy. The topic was treated at length in Plato's Republic, Laws, and Gorgias, just as it was treated by the great Platonist of the Roman Republic, Cicero, in his Commonwealth and Laws. It was treated thoroughly by the Platonic Christian St. Augustine of Hippo in his City of God and Free Choice of the Will. And it was treated by Augustine's followers Alcuin, advisor to Charlemagne, Dante Alighieri, Nicholas of Cusa, and countless great Renaissance scholars and statesmen. The idea of a society founded upon the cultivation of the love of higher pleasures of the spirit rather than the feeding of the lower pleasures of the fleshly passions is thus a long-standing one, which has never been properly resolved and which has been sabotaged relentlessly by historic forces seeking to keep humanity enslaved to beliefs in sense perceptions, as serfs chained to a cave wall, believing that those shadows cast before their eyes were all the reality that exists. It is our contention that without an appreciation for this dynamic interplay between sets of paradigms as a driving force in global grand strategy, then it would be impossible to achieve any truthful understanding of what made such anomalies of history as the 15th century Italian Renaissance, the 1648 Peace of Westphalia, or the 1776 American Revolution possible. In this first volume of The Clash of Two Americas, Rising Tide Foundation founders Cynthia Chung and Matthew Errett break from the commonly practiced tradition of dissecting individual elements of history as myopic events to be carved out of a timeline, dissected, and commented upon. The authors instead propose treating U.S. history as the effect of a significant, continuous struggle between two opposing conceptions of humankind, law, and mind, which has shaped all seemingly discrete events throughout recorded history as one continuous function. Most importantly, following the historical methods outlined by the great Friedrich Schiller in his Universal History lectures, we will treat this study as not only an exploration of the past, but as an exploration of the future, knowing as we do that, one, the past is shaped by ideas of competing futures that did or did not succeed, and two, our present circumstances are themselves both the consequences of the past and also the material which future historians will study when trying to make sense of how we either failed to break from our tragic trajectories or succeeded in avoiding a dark age. Throughout this book, we will explore the origins of the USA as the world's first sovereign republic, and the battles over ideas and policy from leading representatives of either school of thought during the 18th and 19th centuries. On the one hand, we will explore the mind and strategies of paragons of the great Renaissance traditions like Benjamin Franklin and his international network of collaborators that made the events of 1776-1783 possible. On the other hand, we will contrast this with those heirs to the traditions of the Babylonian and Roman empires occupying positions of power within the corridors of the British Empire. With these two opposing forces established, we will be better able to see a context in which representatives influenced by either school of thought played a role for good or ill, sometimes doing both at different times, within the young United States from 1776 to 1901. In Chapter 1, we will explore the international conspiracy of Republican forces largely organized by Benjamin Franklin, stretching from France, Poland, Germany, and Russia, all the way to Morocco and India. This exercise will demonstrate that the United States is both more than many believe it to be, and less than it was meant to become, remaining an unfinished symphony of sorts, whose victory of 1783 was never truly consolidated, despite remaining whole throughout a civil war. From chapters 2 to 4, we will review 3 case studies of failures of people and leaders to capture the pregnant moment of 1776. First, with a review of the causes of French Canada's inability to join the signing of Declaration of Independence as the 14th colony, followed by the failure of Benjamin Franklin's collaborators in France to keep the Revolution of 1789 from sliding into a Jacobin bloodbath. In Chapter 4, we will see how an elderly Marquis de Lafayette missed his second chance to undo the disastrous failure of the earlier French Revolution after the Napoleonic Wars and Congress of Vienna traumatized Europe for nearly 40 years. In Chapter 5, we will return to the case of the United States by testing the modern practice of critical race theory outlined in the 1619 Project that attempts to frame all U.S. history as the direct effect of white supremacists seeking to dominate black slaves. This theory will be contrasted with an approach which both acknowledges the evils done throughout the pre- and post-revolutionary years, while at the same time avoiding the polarizing trap of assuming all ideals professed by American statesmen were simply veils of hypocrisy wrapped in fraud. In Chapter 6, The American System of Political Economy, outlined by Benjamin Franklin and First Treasury Secretary Alexander Hamilton, is explained. This exercise will help to better appreciate what it was that free trade-loving Anglo forces within both England and the USA sought to destroy, and what it was that allowed the young republic to navigate through many storms during its first century of existence. In Chapter 8, the reactivation of Hamilton's system under the leadership of Abraham Lincoln is explored, which itself provides an invaluable insight into how the Union was preserved, and also into the structure of the financial warfare conducted against the Union before, during, and after the Civil War itself, led by forces located in Wall Street, London, Louisiana, and British Canada. In Chapter 9, Cynthia Chung showcases the life and mind of Frederick Douglass, who rose from a situation of slavery to become a leading voice of the abolitionists, to rising yet higher still upon his discovery that the abolitionists themselves did not understand the nature of America's historical struggle. Douglass's defense of Lincoln and efforts to bring cultural as well as political emancipation to both blacks and ignorant whites is explored. In Chapter 10, we delve deeply into the trifold structure of the 19th century deep state operations within the Americas that led in the fueling of fires of civil war and also the assassination of Lincoln, carried out by Confederate Secret Service operations based in Montreal, Canada. In Chapters 11 and 12, the truth of the Alaska Purchase will be unveiled, featuring the role of pro-American forces leading Russia under Tsar Alexander II, whose intervention into the U.S. Civil War not only turned the tide in favor of Lincoln, but also applied Lincoln's system of political economy, that is, protectionism, productive credit, and internal improvements, towards the industrial development of Russia. The story of the 1867 Alaska Purchase, the 1867 British North America Act in Canada, and the intention to connect the U.S. Transcontinental Railway with the planned Russian Trans-Siberian Railway will thus be given new and fresh meaning from the acausal drivel popularly taught in schools today. In Chapter 13, we will continue this story into the case of 19th century Canada in order to evaluate how the British Columbian U.S. annexation movement was sabotaged, why the vast expanses of private Hudson Bay properties, occupying most of Canada, were sold for pennies on the dollar to the Canadian government in 1869, and why the Anglo-Canadian version of the Transcontinental Railway was built as a wedge to, one, keep Canada under monarchical control as a platform of anti-republican operations in the Americas, and two, to keep a wedge lodged between a threatened U.S.-Russian alliance for win-win cooperation, then emerging as the basis for a new global system of sovereign nation-states. In Chapter 14, the story of Lincoln's loyal bodyguard and the first governor of Colorado, William Gilpin, is told in full. Gilpin's role as a prophet of progress, promoting the earliest campaign for a transcontinental railway starting in the 1840s, his efforts to create a U.S.-China alliance to undo the corruption spreading in the USA, his role in preventing the South's opening of a Western Front during the Civil War, his deployment of greenbacks modeled on Lincoln's example, and his 25-year post-Civil War campaign to extend rail not only across the Bering Strait into Eurasia, but also across Africa, South America, Asia, and more. Finally, Chapter 15 ends with the story of Britain's reorganization of their entire system of empire when faced with the crisis of a world of independent sovereign nation-states threatening to undo the unipolar age of Hobbesian survival of the fittest that had characterized the empire as a singular new Roman Empire for nearly two centuries. This chapter introduces the role of new think tanks, starting with Thomas Huxley's X Club in 1865, followed soon thereafter by the Fabian Society in 1878, and the Rhodes-Milner Roundtable Movement in 1902, which unveiled a new grand strategy to reconsolidate the empire's power during the 20th century and beyond. This story will close the present volume and set the stage for Volume 2.